Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys, Four from Your Guitar, hanging out in an undisclosed
yeah.
location in Chicago, Illinois, at the Band Royale Bunker. We are here with a familiar face. If you guys are bass junkies and you've come to Chicago, I bet you know this guy. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Can I swear today?
Absolutely.
Yes. What's up, you fucking nerds?
I love that. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
You're here.
This is fun.
You're pretty. You got pretty eyes, man.
Dude, that's how I got my wife.
Pearson, dude.
I got my wife that way.
Well,
yeah.
Get in line, lady.
That sure wasn't my personality.
Definitely wasn't. Never mind.
Yeah, no. But anyways, talking gear, I've been a fan of yours for tons of time. And we met when I toured CME years ago. But I've been a fan of Band Royale. Thank you, Algorithm. Just as it happens, and it's so cool that we reached out. We happened to be in Chicago. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So here we are doing the rig rundown with Mark and the boys. Mark, tell me about your gear. Got to talk about these Sandbergs.
Yeah, you know, working at CME for a long time, we were a dealer for Sandberg.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love with them, like, right out of the gate as soon as I put my hands on one. And so eventually, you know, I made the transition to start working for them 6 years ago now.
Wow.
And now I just get to play and talk about my favorite basses like all day long. So first up is this California TT4 Passive. This one came, we were working on a prototype for a minute, like with a different neck style. And so I just brought this body back, and then I happened to have this neck laying around, and I just popped this in, and you know, it just has that classic sort of 70s growl, even though the pickup spacing's not there.
Yeah.
And then I actually reached out to Alex Avedisian and had some like 70s style J bass pickups put in here. It's got a nice like Rick growl to it. It's like that like Geddy Lee thing.
Yeah.
You know? A good J style bass is I think really important to have in the arsenal. Mm. Cuts through really well. So yeah, Sandberg California TT4 34 inch scale. It's passive. Just rips.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what it does. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Well, two questions that come to mind is like for a band like what you're doing is. What are you trying to get? I know you mentioned Geddy already, and off camera you mentioned another big one for you is Les. But what are you trying to do in this band bass wise that you need? Then this bass services it.
Yeah. So a lot of our songs are very effects driven, distortion, chorus, modular, modulation effects, and stuff like that.
Metal.
And I think yacht metal. I don't know why we came up with that. We love Mastodon and Steely Dan, and you know, I found that with effects, you know, running an active circuit. It doesn't always, like, you naturally want to boost the bass and stuff like that. Mm. And putting that into an effects chain, it just doesn't always agree in the best of ways.
Mm.
And so I felt a good passive familiar tone was the way to go. Mm. And I love the body shape. And so switching, you know, I switch between fingerstyle and using a pick and stuff like that. I don't really slap with the band yet, but this would lend itself really nicely to that.
Okay.
So, and it's just, you know, some of the greatest rock, space rock, you know, yacht metal, whatever hell, like this makes an appearance at some point in most bands' iterations.
Yeah.
So it's just at home.
So you have a unique perspective of the gear culture and gear life because you worked at the retailer for so long and now you're affiliated with a brand. But, you know, having such time being affiliated with CME and Reverb, it's like you come across so much gear. How are you able to decide, like, this is what I need, this is what I want? Because it's kind of like a overabundance, probably what you've seen and get acquired with.
Well, part of it's getting older and just like finding what you like and just kind of sticking with it.
Uh-huh.
And so, like I said, with regard to Sandberg, like I knew it's going to be a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know it's going to be like a nice quality, and it checks all of my boxes aesthetically, sonically, and like just in terms of the longevity of the instrument. It has a track record of doing all those things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like buy once, you know, like never have to buy it. You know, like buy it right once and then you have to worry about it ever again. So that does work with this. Being surrounded by just every amazing instrument.
Yeah.
Like I was, you know, Joel and I would often joke that it was like an unfair advantage when it comes to having all that music gear at your disposal. But over time, I found that, you know, step one is in the hands.
Yeah.
You know, like you, and so I think that every piece of gear, even like the shittiest Dan Electro pedal, has a purpose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you sometimes have to really, really search for it to find it. But having the luxury of having all this stuff around you, it's like, oh, I know how to get from point A to point B really quickly with this piece of gear.
Mm.
And so I think it's just just learning for so long, like what everything does and just what speaks to me and my hands and idiot brain.
Well, should we keep cruising along through the bases?
Actually, while I've got this one on, I'm going to show this off. This is actually, this is my favorite little toy that has come out in the past decade plus. This is a Backbeat. This is the Gen 2. There's the first generation's a little bit different design. This thing, when I first saw it, I saw like the Kickstarter that came out. And I was like, oh, it's a vibrating like rumble pack, like a butt kicker, essentially, like drummers
would
use.
Yeah.
So I saw it and I'm like, oh, it's like a Nintendo 64 rumble pack. That's kind of cool. I kind of want to fuck with that, but I don't want to just take a chance. What if it sucks? Uh-huh. And so they happened to be at the Summer NAMM in Nashville that year, that same like 2017 or something. And I was there and I was like, oh, I'm going to go check that out. And so I went to their booth and I was like, hey, I'm Mark, I work at CME. Like, you know, I've heard a lot of good things about the thing. And they're getting endorsed by like Billy Sheehan and Victor Wooten, you know, all those guys. And so they put the bass on me. It has a headphone out. It has an auxiliary in. They put the headphones on me. So I'm just playing direct. And he's like, yeah, just play a few things. And I'm just playing on this like uncomfortable bass. And I'm just kind of like, I'm not really liking the way this sounds. And he's like, all right, I'm going to turn up the sub on your pack. And he starts turning it up slowly, and immediately I'm like, whoa! I'm like, playing changed immediately, because you can feel every single note. It's like standing like leaning against an 810 cab, but you're not beholden to be in one spot. You can just be wherever you want. You always feel like that rumble on your back. And then he started to dial it out, and I had this just vicious reaction, like caveman again. I was just like, you better fucking turn that back on, man. Like, I was so legitimately upset, and I was like, well, I need to buy this, because, and I like, refuse to play without it.
Really?
Like, even practice at this point. Yeah, it's just because when you're playing in situations when you can't necessarily hear yourself, you can't feel the instrument, you play differently, you dig in more, you, like, your hands are in an awkward position more, and, like, you tense up more. This has eliminated all of that for me.
Okay.
You know, some people like it, some people don't, and as I get more into playing with in-ears, this is such a great tool to have. Huh. I mean, like in the Nashville scene, I think like a lot of places on the strip, from what I understand, they don't allow for backline.
Yeah.
Right? So you're just playing like a preamp and then that goes to front of house. Mm-hmm. And then you either have your ears or wedge and stuff like this. I think this would be a really great in between, but big fan, the Backbeat.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I think it's also Bluetooth capable. Like, I think they're working on like an app so you can actually like adjust the frequency attenuation and shit, so like guitar players can play with it. Like, actually, Joel plays in such low tunings. We were just dicking around with it, like, you know, a couple months ago. Mm. He like had it on. He was like, "Oh man, this actually feels awesome. It's like I'm sitting on top of the amp."
Wow.
Yeah.
I noticed in the cables here, like, what's going on there with the connections?
Yeah. So they started finally. They made this really awesome Y cable situation. So it plugs into the side here of the unit, and then it splits. So you have one going into the bass. The bass goes to the unit, and then the other one is is where you can plug your other connector that goes to your pedal board or to your. So this is the out.
Got
essentially.
It.
And so you plug a normal quarter inch cable into that. So yeah, big fan, huge fan, really cool toy. So this next one. This is the Sandberg VS4 passive, and the same kind of thing. You know, it was sort of a Frankenbass, one of our masterpiece aged ones, and it came through, and I fell in love with it. You know, I like being around old vintage instruments. I've always found that Sandberg's Relic Jobs, that was like one of the first things that attracted to me, like from the sales side, because of the trend towards that.
Yeah.
But it looks like having something like this come in, and then having a real, you know, 57, 58 P bass that has similar aging, and like putting them next to them, and then like seeing all the other manufacturers who do like the Relic thing.
Yeah.
And some of them aren't even close, but this is like so close to it. And there's also, with the masterpiece aging, there's some other, it's not just aesthetics that's going on here. We also do this vibration treatment. I'm not sure if you know, like there's like violin makers who will find like the center frequency the frequency range where that instrument sits, and they'll pump music like vibration into it over like hundreds of hours to simulate like years of playing gigs and doing that. So it breaks it in essentially.
Yeah, like Jason Isbell in a rundown we did said he did that with his Martins. He would put Outkast.
Yeah, the little thing.
It,
yeah, exactly.
Bump it right through the
hole. So with this, it's the same concept, right? Where we like have. Are you familiar with like Ike amplification?
Yes,
bass
I
company?
Am. E-I-C-H.
So Thomas Ike, he did Tech Amp first, and they had like the pleasure boards, like those boards that vibrate that you stand on. So we got one of something like that from him.
Okay.
And then it clamps to this whole like unit where we like clamp it all down and everything. And we just pump hundreds of like 100 hours of bass playing through the speakers or through that like that sub essentially, and it just kind of vibrates into space. So we did years ago, this was before my time, a study with, I believe it was like the University of Dresden in Germany, with their physics department and like, you know, acoustics, and like there's like measurable differences. There's like a control study and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So there's some science behind it. It's kind of cool. And then also we do a thermo treatment. I know like for guitar players, that would be more like torrification and stuff like that.
Yep.
So with the necks, you know, like we'll roast them. That also changes the wood on a cellular level or whatever. Did some like proper studies as well to do that, just to show that. So this would be like the most simulated, like vintage sounding and affected instrument. But this one in particular, you know, very, very familiar sound and style. I think, again, every bassist should have, you know, something like this in their arsenal, I think. The sound people just love it. It's easy to mix. Also had Alex Avedisian put like a 60 style P pickup in there. So this is, right now I'm going as clean as I can.
Okay.
I don't even know what to play. It's probably not even in tune. Just old school P bass sound.
Yeah.
The tone rolled off. And then like I'll put like, I'll like run this. This, I've got like the Quad Cortex just came out with the new update, so you can put like some of the plugins that you own. So like the Parallax bass distortion plugin, I love it. It rips. It's just a cool split coil vintage style bass.
Right,
you know?
On.
But yeah, so that's that guy. This one gets a lot of love, just because I can just go into any environment with something like this.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of like solo artists and stuff, like I don't play with, but I've heard so many tales of like, you know, especially like music directors would be like, yo, you got a P bass, and this fits that without having to play one.
Mm.
So this one is actually the 48. This was the prototype. It came out in 2015. I took the knobs off. I don't even know why. Probably because it's just like I tinker with shit. It's just like, don't touch them. But this was the prototype. Because while I was working at CME, I got around Thunderbirds and stuff and loved that sort of offset. You know, I'm a big guy.
They're cool.
It covers a lot of real estate, right? Covers this up, you know, like when I wear my skinny jeans, you know? And so I also am quite fond of Shoreline Gold. The first video I'd ever done for CME was for a 66 Shoreline Gold P bass. And so when they, I sent some emails to the Sandberg rep at the time and said, hey, wouldn't it be cool? Sandberg already does this sort of like J&P style. Like, would they ever do something, you know, like this? And right away, he got back and the CEO was like, yep, he's in, he's drawing up designs. We'll let you know what you think. I had originally pitched this as an exclusive for CME.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the early ones that came in had the CME logo sort of branded into the back of the headstock. And then other dealers around the world for Sandberg were like, yo, we want that.
We want in.
That's cool. So it took off really well. And so I got the very first one. And so with that, you probably can't see with the camera, maybe when you do it with B-roll, but you'll see the serial number I had him put in, the number 15, and then HLSN, which is my son's birth year, and also this is birth year.
Oh, nice.
And then my son's initials.
Perfect.
When they came in. And Holger, the CEO of Sandberg, likes to call it the golden baby. So this is the first one, and it's gotten the most playing time with Royale, because this was my first, like, unique instrument that was, like, mine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then also that brings me to the last one, which is same one, same style. So this actually, I should mention that these have the Sandberg like 48 pickups.
Okay, I was gonna ask about that.
It's essentially like a humbucker, like kind of like Music Man style humbucker.
Mm.
And then this one is like same sort of casing, but more like a split coil.
And passive though?
So both of these basses That one's active still. It has a two-band EQ,
okay,
like bass and treble. This one, I actually had wired my friend Sean Leftkovitz from Tyrant Tone. He builds cabs and stuff. Great dude. I had him wire this one like almost like, it, first of all, passive, like straight passive, took out the active circuit. And he found an old schematic from an old P bass. So he like got like old caps, like paper oil caps and stuff, and wired this passive. So it's just volume and blend and tone, passive tone. And this is a producer's knob. It does nothing. it's great. It's just kind of like that Lee Sklar thing.
Yeah, so he's
I didn't want to like fill in that hole. I figured you might want to put it, you know, active again. I'm like, leave the knob on there. That's perfect. Yeah. It'll be my producer's knob like Lee Sklar. This is kind of great. So this one's cool because I'm in another band. We do like a lot of doom and heavy, like black and metal, Huntsman.
Okay.
And so I wanted something that had that sort of like murdered out aesthetic as well, like the black headstock or the black neck, and then like the reverse headstock.
That's
to
cool.
Just kind of make it a little meaner looking. But this one has my other son's initials and birth year.
Gotta make him feel included.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is their heirlooms, I think. But I love it. Yeah, it's my sad boy bass.
Well, want to grab the first one you talked about, and then we can kind of hear the rig.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, so far we kind of, we dabbled a little bit with the Neural, but what do we got here amps and cab-wise?
Yeah, so another company I've come across over the years is Bergantino. Jim and Holly Bergantino, they're like the best aunt and uncle, essentially.
Yeah.
Like your favorite aunt and uncle who actually like listens to you and you can have real conversations with. So Jim is such an amazing engineer. I first came across his stuff, you know, doing shows where you share a backline, the bass player would show up with his, it was like an early NV610, which is like the flagship cab, the thing that's best, one of the best cabs ever made. And then eventually he started making amps and working at CME. I was just like, man, it's like high quality stuff. Everybody universally respects his stuff. I want to get him into the store. And then I started to build a relationship that way with them. Mm-hmm. They had come out with the earlier versions of these amps called the Forte, which is just like a simple knob tweak, you know, like anybody who like wants to just plug and play, that's what these are designed for.
Okay.
And then, in 2019, I did this thing for Sandberg. It was an event that Labella Strings, you know, them in New York, they do this thing called the Lords of the Low End. They have this like showroom. And a bunch of different manufacturers, like a little trade show, and with all these different manufacturers like Sandberg and Gensler, you know, Aguilar, and then Bergantino was there. And so the night before, we're all setting up, and I was by myself because the other guys are in Germany, right? Mm-hmm. And so Jim and Holly show up, and Jim's like, "You're a big distortion guy, right?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, that seems to be pretty obvious by now, right?" He's like, "I got something for you tomorrow to check out." And so he took an early version of this head, the Forte D, which has the drive. And he went to his hotel and reprogrammed the drive to a circuit and sound that, like, with different crossovers or whatever, you know, math.
Science stuff.
Yeah, that he knew that I would like. And so, like, the next day the show starts and he's, like, super, like, he's like, "Hey, when you get a chance, come on up." And I'm like, "Yeah, man, yeah, as soon as there's, like, a lull, I'll head up there." And then, like, midday he comes down and he's like, you know, "Hey, there's no mind, do you want to come? I can have Holly hang down here at the thing if you want." I'm like, "Yeah, sure." So she comes and like hangs out at the Sandberg booth. I go up with him. I walk up to it. I play like six note and I'm like, "Yep, this is the sound." It was just like gnarly, awesome distortion, like way over the top, more over the top than what he had originally put in there.
Yeah.
And then from what I understand, I don't know if this is true, but I remember distinctly, like, apparently like two guys walked up and like, "Yeah, I got to buy that." And it was awesome.
Wow.
And so eventually I was just, you know, I was just like, I really want to support these people, especially after Holly, that same show, she was like, "Mark, have you eaten anything?" Like I said, like the best aunt ever, right? And I was like, "Oh, I was going to get a burrito after this." And she's like, "Hold on, you allergic to peanuts?" It's like, "No." And she comes downstairs and it was like the greatest, most delicious peanut butter and jelly sandwich I've ever had in my life. And like,
are you a crust guy?
I'll eat the crust.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, especially if it's like good bread.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so like, she like hooks it up, this amazing PB&J. Obviously, there's like some special ingredient in there, and you can probably guess what it was.
Yeah.
And it was love.
Yeah.
And it was, you could taste the love. No, it was amazing. And so eventually, I actually started working with them right around the time where he came out with the Super Pre pedal, which we'll get into in a bit. And then we all lead up to this guy, which is the newest. This is actually another prototype. This is the original Forte HP. It was originally like a 1200 watt amp. and it's seen a few changes over the years. Mm. Like eventually got to the HP2, which has like a little bit more output. HP2X, which has this Cinemag transformer in the input. So like you get that nice like upper harmonic distortion that's real subtle, but it just makes the lows and low mids really pleasant. And then it's the same head case. He found this 2000 watt power module that fits perfectly into this box. And so he took this one and he put that module in there. So this is actually a 2000 watt head, and it's become the Forte Jeez. HP Ultra. So all the same like architecture. He's known for his low pass filter, which is probably the most useful tone shaping tool that's out there. When you dial it all the way up, that's sort of like the default setting. If you want like more of a vintage sound, I kind of roll it back here in favor, like, you know, like 1.7 hertz. It's just awesome. There's really not much dialing that you have to do with this amp. And I found with the Ultra, with the 2000 watt guy, I don't need to have this jacked up as much to fit through the mix. I've actually found myself turning down a bit, and my bandmates are like, I can hear the bass better than ever, even though the volume is less.
Wow. Yeah.
And I also like, we can hear each other singing and shit a lot more. And it was awesome. It was just like, it's just an, I think what it is just that efficiency of 2000 watts and everything's kind of moving exactly as it should.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not overpowering the speakers as one would think. So then that brings us to this guy. This is the HDN 112. This is like the predecessor essentially to their, it's like the NXT series.
Okay.
So it's like a neodymium speaker with a nice tweeter. And then this one down here gets more play time.
15?
This is, so no, this is a reference 310.
Oh.
So 310 inch ceramic speakers. Jim loves working with ceramics. They just sound awesome. Like, yeah, they're heavier speakers than the neodymium, but for an audiophile, that's just the way to go.
Yeah.
And it's actually not, it's the way that it's constructed, there's some Baltic birch in there, and like it's just a lighter ply as well. So it's already not as heavy, but it's balanced really well. And then the ceramic speakers don't add too much weight to it. It sounds magnificent. Yeah. And I actually, most of the time I put this 310 when I'm playing live, I'll put this 310 on the reference 115.
Okay.
Which, you know, they work really well together.
And what's the Super Pre up here?
Yeah, so this is the like souped up preamp. You know, you've got you can see like the 4-band EQ. There's all sorts of stuff under the hood. You know, I named this one Thick with 2 C's. this preset. You've got like 21 different presets to work with. You can like cycle through and see like the low pass filter, high pass filter, the variable ratio compressor, what type of compression, is it series, is it parallel, you know, is it like a 50-50 blend? You can have like different types of effects like overdrive, distortion, fuzz, how much drive you want, you know, how loud you want it to be. There's a crossover frequency too, which is especially useful when you're using overdrive. And then like how much of the effect you want to blend in. And then recent firmware update, you can adjust the center frequencies of the 4-band EQ, how much gain you want going in as well, what frequency. So I kind of favor 80 hertz. Mm. And then what the shape of the Q is. So right now I have it wide. So as you turn up or down, it's kind of a wide spectrum. And then you can go medium or narrow or even notch. Just if you want to dump, if you're in a room where you need to like dump 500 hertz for whatever reason, you can do that.
Okay.
Which is kind of rad. So this goes into the neural quad cortex, the neural DSP quad cortex. Been a fan of Doug Castro since he was doing Dark Glass stuff. Mm. Him getting involved with neural and the plugins and stuff, and then having a piece of hardware that does what this does. I mean, you all know what
it's a powerful thing.
It really is. It does everything. The latest firmware update, or like the Cortex, it's like the 3.2.
Okay.
Where they introduced the Parallax, like their bass distortion plugin. I love that. A lot of times I'll just, when I'm recording or even doing demos, it sounds, I'll end up like doing scratch bass, me going into an interface and then into the Parallax and adjusting it. And like that might end up being like the end result is, as a, you know, because of that. And so with the newest firmware update, they brought the Parallax into the unit. So now, since I have the license for the Parallax, it just ended up on this thing.
Got it.
And the shaping on it's awesome. It's got like a low compressor. you got mid drive, high drive, and a whole bunch of like different, like, you know, frequencies to play around with. And I love this because like the modulation effects are awesome. Like I'll do like this is like the sort of like atmospheric, like space delay reverb type thing. We do like swells, just trails for every... stuff like that. And it's like, you know, like the drummer's like, oh, I gotta go pee, or you know, the guitar player's like, oh, I broke a string, I could just like vamp doing stuff like that, and just, you know,
feel
everyone's like, cool, drugs are awesome. Yeah. that's what this does. And then like I got like a slap back with like a cool like slap back delay with the parallax included. This is just straight up Meat City. So a nice like blend, which I also like that you can control so many different parameters, like even like the splitters that are in your chain. Mm-hmm. You can like choose if you want, like for this scene, you know, I stomp on F and like this is like the 50-50 dirty clean, and like the chorus is mixed way more in there, and then I go to like my clean setting and all that's turned off. Or if like I'm playing like, you know, like a atmospheric thing, want to let that run, like switching over to the song, like I can start playing, you know, if the volume's turned up. But like you could see, like you could hear the trails kind of like naturally go
still there.
Or in other stomp boxes, like you'll click between the effects and it's just like a hard stop. So I love that they included that on there. But yeah, it's just a computer, you know. It's all it is, just an awesome computer with really great user interface.
Tone computer.
Yeah, exactly. And then
you get the last kind of standalone here.
So this just came to market. I haven't used it in a recording sense or a live sense outside of like a few demo videos and stuff. But MXR got together with Ian Allison, who like is part of the Scott's Bass Lessons crew. Great, great fucking dude. Love that guy. I love him. He's awesome. He's a great public speaker.
Yeah.
Just awesome guy. Has a good ear for this stuff. And they've been working on this for the past, I think, 2 years, but it's a bass synth. It's the MXR bass synth. And they took classic sounds from, like, you know, Quincy Jones, like, you know, like Michael Jackson's Thriller. And,
yeah.
Herbie Hancock, Chameleon, like that sound, Parliament's Flashlight, Peter Gabriel with Sledgehammer.
Yeah. That,
and that OC2 sound.
There's a lot of
sound.
Reference points, yeah.
Yeah, and it does it all, like, out of the box. Like, that's the thing. Like, you can, like, it comes with 8 different presets already. You can control what type of oscillation you want, like a sawtooth or, I think it's like sawtooth, square wave, and what's the other one? Triangle?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. So, or sine, I think. But it's awesome. Out of the box, it's great. There's some under the hood features, like, you know, like secondary layer menu.
Oh yeah.
So like some bass players are like, oh, it doesn't track really well, or there's some latency and stuff. I found that playing a passive bass through it out of the box, I don't have to go under the hood to adjust stuff. Mm. But going active or something that has hotter pickups, you might have that kind of latency that kind of gets in the way of things. So you can adjust like the input gain, you can adjust the glide and all of that stuff. And I think those are important things that people have overlooked. But just like, you know, kicking it on, this might like, you can hear like that, like the what the flip, like I'm playing terribly,
but that sound is there.
Yeah, it's just that's like the sound. Or like that, what's that, Like a Prayer? It's like a is it Guy Pratt?
Yeah,
like,
I think
he played
so.
The original bass line and then they doubled it with synth. It just sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So love this thing. Like with this guy's like or you could do like the Toe Jam and Earl theme. But I don't know, yeah. But it's just super cool. I love it. It's a fun toy. It makes me not have to learn proper synth bass lines,
yeah.
And just kind of like a nice little cheat
one
code
less thing to worry about.
So I'm still finding a way to work it in. Actually, before this came out, I came up I was like, I want to, there has to be a way that I can like kind of make my own synth sounds. And I got real obsessed.
Dope bass synth.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that song. Do you ever see the movie Bronson? I mean, you fucking look like him.
No, right? I haven't.
Oh man. So it's about like Britain's most notorious criminal.
Criminal. Yeah.
Yeah. Charles Bronson. And it was, Tom Hardy, awesome, awesome movie. And there's a sequence where they have a song by this band called Glass Candy. And it's like a digital Versacolor, I think. And so I was like, I got to find a way to get that sound on here. And then I realized that they have a tremolo on here that you can adjust and like, you know, you can control the wave format on there. Uh-huh. So I have the sine going down and it has that like, oh, I have the wrong thing. There we go. A little slower, actually. Yeah. Like speed it up.
My organs are trembling.
Oh yeah, it's super good. You can get something brown note. Like if you're feeling like a little like backed up, you just like put that and this on. You know. You can just dick around all day long.
Yeah.
Know? So I love that, but you know, I unless this is going like direct in ears with the drummer, there's no like practical application for that just yet. But we've had some like little jams here and there in between songs, and I'll just like kick that on and just have this like cool synth vibe to it. And now I don't have to worry about like having some sort of tempo-based modulation effect. I can just go to that thing and kind of scratch that itch as well.
Well, right on, Mark. Your rig is beautiful. It sounds awesome. I can't wait to talk to the other guys.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Now we're joined by Joel, another familiar face. Joel, how you doing?
Doing great.
Yeah.
Doing great.
Thanks for having us at the Band House.
Of course.
It's a special treat.
It's, you know, it's got its own kind of...
There's charm.
...mythos at this point, the Band House. But yeah, it's great.
You guys have made it a cool space, and you got a lot of cool gear, so tell me about it.
This
we
is do.
A fun little treat you got right here. You got Gibson, you got another one behind us that we'll talk about, but let's start with the Les
Paul.
Yeah,
I got a lot of stuff, but the best thing, we'll start with number one, I guess. I wouldn't say it's the first real guitar I purchased, because like I had a handful of Gibsons, like an American made, you know, where like when you're a kid you think like, that's like a real guitar.
Yeah.
But this one was one of the first guitar that I actually spent like real money on.
Serious, yeah.
And 72 custom. It's all original other than the tailpiece. I have the original tailpiece. I gotta be honest with you, I have no idea where it is. It's a bummer. I've lost it. A long time I had a B7 Bigsby with the the Vibramate and stuff. So you didn't have to like add. So but I had a Bigsby on this for years, and sometime in between then and now I lost the tailpiece. But it's here, I just don't know where it is. But yeah, it's all original. It's awesome. It has the embossed Gibson logo pickups.
I love that. Those are cool.
Which they, you know, early 70s patent number. They're not like the original patent, but they're stamped. They're great sounding pickups. It's a little noisy just because, again, it's an older guitar, but like it's something that like, you know, I've used it on every record. I don't really take it and play it live very often just because this one, if something happened to it, like I'd be really bummed out, and I can get 95% of the way there with guitars I'm not as sentimental about. Mm-hmm. But this one's like my number one. I love this one. It's refretted sometime well before I ever owned it. It just sounds great. It's really bitey. It's incredibly heavy. It weighs like 11. And again, like I had a Bigsby B7 with a Vibramate, which
just
is
an
another
anchor.
Like, yeah, it used to weigh like 12 pounds for a while when I played this thing. And then I, you know, developed like early onset scoliosis and I decided to quit.
Yeah.
This is like my number one. A lot of everything I've recorded has this guitar on it for the most part. It's a little bit bitier, snarlier than traditional humbucker guitars, I think, because just lower output, older pickups.
Okay.
And but it sounds great, and it definitely has like a little bit of weird magic to it. And then again, the it's been refretted, but the refret was like small vintage style frets. I don't know why you would do a refret and then like and like opt for small frets. Someone did.
Yeah.
But I've gotten used to it. So there are some dead spots in certain things. It's not like the best recording guitar for certain things, because like when you get past X fret, there are areas that don't ring out the way they're supposed to. Mm. But it sounds amazing. I love it. I'll never get rid of it. It's, you know, inflation. It's worth way more than I paid for it at this point. And it's never broken, even though it's like, I don't know if you can tell how thin, it's paper thin.
Wow.
Like, absolutely paper thin, like 0.78 maybe, like paper thin at the first fret.
How long have you had it?
2013, 12 maybe. So this was like a Chicago Music Exchange purchase. Obviously, I used to work there.
Yeah.
And you know, you get access to a lot of cool stuff pretty quick.
Yeah, kind of asked Mark about that. Like, you get such a deluge of, like, information and gear. How are you sourcing that stuff for what you're personally doing and then how it reflects to Band Royale? Because it's just like a fire hose coming at you guys with, like, gear and chances and stuff.
So that's the thing. Like, early on, like, it's, like, almost too much to deal with. And so you, like, my guitar collection right now is in, like, the 12 to 15 range. And it used to be, like, in, like, the 20 to 25 range.
Yeah.
Because things would just, like, be a good deal and it would show up. You're like, oh, I want that. And then once you have it, you're like, I just spent $1,000 on an effects pedal that I'm going to use for like one track of one overdub of one song.
Yeah.
Like, why do I have this 12 string Dan Electro?
Pragmatism, you know, like, kicks in.
Yeah. And like the first time you have to restring it, you're like, well, fuck this. I'm just going to, sorry.
No, you
like,
go
I'm
for
just going to, I'm going to sell this because I'm never going to restring it. I'm never going to be able to keep it in tune, whatever. And you kind of like, I think you get older and you start to like whittle it down to like what actually makes sense.
Yeah.
And especially there, it was, after like that initial rush of like gear acquisition syndrome that you get working in a place like that, you start to like kind of fine tune like what you're looking for specifically. Mm. Like I have a need. I need this type of thing. Like I don't have a Gretsch Bigsby sound, so I need something that does that. So
yeah.
You end up finding something that does that. Or like I need this thing for this, and you end up finding stuff. And then sometimes stuff shows up, it's just so cool and it's such a good deal because somebody did things to it that are like horrible, but I didn't do it. It's already done.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't have to feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Like you refinished it with some bizarre, awful choices, and I can just like buy it, like make it cool, but I get a thing for cheap. So it's kind of like some stuff you just like get because it's cool and it's there.
Yeah.
And other stuff you get because you need it. But like I'm definitely at the point now with the band where it's like only thing that ever comes in is stuff that is specifically needed. You know, acquisition, you start running out of space.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's either space or cash. Those are the two things.
Most things in life, you know, space and cash.
Yeah. Well, before we move on to another guitar, like you've talked about, can we hear the snarl?
So this one I have tuned up. I use a weird tuning a lot in this band, but specifically with this guitar where it's like an open D6.
Huh.
So it's like a... So, clean, it's thick, a little chimey, the neck. But you throw a little gain in front of it.
God.
So, it sounds good.
Yeah.
It handles gain really well. The problem is, again, they're so low output that you'll kind of dial things in and then you
put something else,
grab something else, and it's like overdriven to the point where it's compressed and weird and you have to dial things back. So at this point, whenever I play stuff live or even for recording or jamming, there are just certain types of things that I use this for you know, in the band setting outside of recording. And it's usually like the open tuning where it's a lot of like dirty clean, like not super overdriven, more of a dirty clean type of sound. Because it's got like a chime and a weird otherworldliness, because again, how kind of low output, and you can, even though it's a humbucker, you can kind of hear a little bit of, you get some 60 cycle hum that like sneaks out because I don't think that the coils are balanced perfectly. Right, quieter in the middle. Yeah, but yeah, so I don't use this for like a lot of super heavy stuff anymore because it squeals like a fucking pig, dude.
Yeah.
Like a stuck pig. It just goes and it's not fun recording, especially with like a noise gate where it's just choking everything. Mm. So it just, it's, but again, I don't want to like mess with it. I don't want to, I could swap out the pickups for pickups that I know are amazing, but I have multiple
other things,
guitars that look just like this and play just like this that I don't have to worry about messing with the originality. So this one kind of is what it is. And it's my number one, but it's actually not really these days the most
played.
The most played. That's good. It's not. It's my number one. It means the most to me, but it's not the most played because there are a lot of other things that are, like sometimes you need a Camry, right? And it's like cool to have. Like
I got an Accord.
It's cool to have like a stick shift Datsun in the garage, but like it's not very practical for getting groceries.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need to like get groceries with the guitar. You just need like meat that sounds good, that doesn't squeal, doesn't feedback. And this one, as much as I love it, it's an old guitar and it has the old guitar issues. And so it's kind of like I break it out like, in the time of need, but like I always use it specifically with any of these like kind of weird open string, weird voicing. I use a lot of alternate tunings. And like, this is one I use for whenever I'm doing like clean, dirty, clean, overdubs for like texture, things like that.
All right. Yeah. Well, as you grab another guitar you want to talk about, how did you land on that tuning?
Well, that tuning specifically, it's like, it's a pretty short story. I just ripped it off. I've always been a big fan of the band Grizzly Bear.
Okay.
And the guitar player, Dan Rose from Grizzly Bear, is like an immense guitar player, but like not like in the traditional guitar hero sense, not like a Steve Vai type of thing, like more of a really bizarre voicings and also like what he can do, the complexity while he's singing too, just really weird stuff.
Yeah.
And they had a bunch of songs. Like I always, even when I first started playing guitar, like I learned to play guitar by just learning to play my favorite band's songs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just by ear, like listen to the record and figure it out. And then once in a while you'd be like, oh, that note doesn't work. Oh, it's because they tuned this, whatever. So I kind of like by ear would figure out alternate tunings and stuff. And he used this tuning that's, again, it's this open D6 tuning. It's like a drop D, but then you take the G and drop it to F sharp.
Okay.
And then you take the high E and you drop that down to D. Huh. So when you strum that chord, it's almost like a Hawaiian lap steel chord,
yeah,
right? And I started playing with it and just discovered that like I kind of understood the geometry of the thing and like where chords sat and how they worked. And then with any type of open tuning, I feel like kind of the whole point is like getting like new, interesting, droning open strings, mm-hmm, based on the shapes that you're playing, yeah, under it. And it was just like a totally like new, different world of like nostalgic, like sepia toned, like almost like silent film era type of like,
yeah,
weird melodicism. And then I thought, I'll just steal that and then I'll just add gain. And then, and then, you know, try to turn it into like my own sort of thing. So I ended up using that a lot. But that's literally like, I didn't think of it, just stole it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing. I think like everybody, like you start playing stuff in Dadgad, like nobody thought of Dadgad. Like you heard Zeppelin and
someone
you're like,
else,
cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to play a Dadgad.
Yeah.
So same type of thing.
Cool. Well, what guitar do you want to talk about next?
I guess we'll just do this because this is my newest toy.
Fun story.
And I'm so excited to show it and talk,
yeah,
about it. This is Daniels, who is a guitar builder from the UK. Everything's like one guy. Everything's master built like by hand from like start to finish. And it obviously looks like a...
there's a certain look to
Les
it.
Les Paul Custom, right?
Yeah.
And this is called the Royale 55, and this gentleman had reached out to the band through social media, and he was like, I really think that I'd love for Joel to play one of my guitars. I think you'd really like him. Here's the information. So I go on the website and I look at it, and I realize that the guitar is called the Royale 55, and I was like, that's a cool coincidence. It's called the Royale 55, and he's like, no, it's called that because like I actually love your band and I know that you play a Black Beauty, so that's why it's called that. And I was like, are you kidding me?
That's a huge honor.
So, yeah, it's immense, crazy,
yeah,
no idea. And so the fact that he had done that and it's as good as it is, and he was just generous enough to ship this to us so that I could use it on the new record and play it and, you know, show it to you guys obviously for, mm-hmm, this. But it's, again, it looks like a Les Paul Custom and it's very similar, but the body, as opposed to being all mahogany, is Spanish cedar.
Reduce some weight.
Reduces weight, but it has a darker sound than like a maple or, you know, like poplar, a lot of like the standard kind of like non-mahogany body woods that you'd use.
Yeah.
So it has like a darker tonal nature of a mahogany, but it's way lighter. Like this weighs like 8 pounds. Like, I mean, this would change my life, you know? but then it still has a, like a 55 Les Paul wood, it has a mahogany cap instead of a maple cap. So it's like a dark sounding body wood with a mahogany cap, which is also slightly darker sounding.
Yeah.
And then it has the P90s, and like true to form, they're a, Mojo is the brand, and it's a P90 in the bridge, and it's their actual staple Alnico P90 in the neck, which is a very different sounding P90 than what the bridge is, and it's almost closer to like a Dynasonic almost.
Okay.
And so...
Yeah, tonally, I don't know it's much about them, but they look cool.
You, yeah, I mean, like, it would be like sonically. It'd be like an early 50s duo jet with, you know, like those, like, the D'Armin, like big single coils with like those huge slugs,
yeah,
for each thing, or even a Jazzmaster almost. And I'm not, I'm not big on, Fender guitars are great. I love them. I just don't play them. It's a scale thing for me.
Oh, all right.
I'm just so used to like the neck pitch angle and the scale of a Gibson style guitar. So I don't play a lot of, you know, Fender style guitars, but specifically the single coil, that fat single coil sound that you get from a Jazzmaster is something that like I don't have. I've always wanted, but this kind of like does that, but it feels like everything else I play. So it's kind of a, it has a little tummy contour, and then it has a top of the neck here too. It has contour for the upper frets. So instead of having like this hard geometric angle you have to deal with, you can actually get up here and do stuff. And then the headstock, as you can see, it's like a slightly tapered, skinnier headstock. So you get no break angle. So it stays in tune. When you retune the G and the B string, it doesn't pop. Oh. It just does what it's supposed to, which is amazing. And this has been blowing my mind lately. This is my newest one. Again, it's Daniel's Guitars out of the UK. Amazing. Could not talk about it any more highly, because this is it's a master-built, handmade Gibson for the most part. For me, yeah.
For the band.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
It's cool that it looks like he does a cool combination of like old school aesthetics, look, influences, but then some modern stuff that players want, like the neck.
Yeah, it's got all the stuff that's like important to have vintage spec is there, but the stuff that's like we have obviously like used science to move forward. We know that like having the break angle is not great for tuning, right? Mm. So it doesn't have that. We know that you get more access to the higher frets if you have a little bit of a contour. So it has the contour. It's hidden. You can't tell. But it's there. It's also, it's not double bound, which makes the back end, when you double bind the customs, like my 72, that corner like cuts into you. It's not super comfortable. And this doesn't have the back there binding. Yeah. So it's just smoother. And again, like the belly contour. So it's got a lot of modern, comfort features, I guess.
Yeah.
But again, it's very vintage, like the vibe, the look, everything. It's aged. It looks.
Yeah. Got a little,
it looks like an old guitar, feels like a brand new guitar, and that's kind of all you can hope for.
So. Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah. Let's keep cruising through your stash here.
Sure.
What do we got next?
So this one is a 1962 Silvertone, like people call it the Chris Isaak guitar, because it showed up in the Wicked Games music video, which there's a lot more in that music video, if you remember.
Yeah.
Rolling around in the...
I don't really remember much of the guitar.
Rolling around on the beach, yeah. but it's one of those guitars that, like, if you know, you know. In the vintage world, again, it's a silver tone. It's a bolt-on hollow body with mini humbuckers who are offset pulls, right? Like a 70s Tele thin line or something, right? But every bit of this that isn't nailed down, all of it was like high quality made by... So like the Bigsby was like a real Bigsby B7. The whole entire wiring harness is like an ES-335 harness from 1962. Oh. So like a lot of people would buy these, gut them just to like get the electronics to like make their Gibson complete. The pickups were like designed and made by Gibson.
Interesting.
Patent number, like mini humbuckers basically, but they're wide range mini humbuckers, which is again, it's unique. They're not standard mini humbuckers. Uh-huh. And it's a fully hollow guitar, which again, you think about like Gibson, I don't know if they ever really made other than the Crestwood. It was a really weird hollow body relic of the late 60s, but there's not like a Gibson that's like fully hollow with mini humbuckers for the most part. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of like my like Gretsch, I guess if you call it that. I wanted something that was hollow that had a Bigsby that I could get that sound. When I got it though and I started playing it, it just sounded so good. It doesn't keep a tune at all.
I don't imagine.
It is brutal, but every time you're recording, you get like one pass, and then you're like, oh shit, I can redo it. And you get one pass, but when you get it, it sounds so good, and it feeds back in an incredibly musical way. It has like ghosts in it, I swear to you. You'll be feeding back with like reverb, a little bit of gain, and like notes will come out of it that make no sense harmonically with what your left hand is doing.
Uh-huh.
So it feels like it's a little bit possessed. But it sounds amazing. I love this guitar. I've used it on like everything, but again, it's like a pain to use. But this is one of my favorites. I would love to get like something new that like did this, that was reliable.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. And I don't want to pay somebody like $10,000 to do it, but one day I'll have something that does this that isn't this. But until then, I'll just keep using this very difficultly whenever we record.
Thoughts, quirks.
And I can never use it live ever, even though I want to, because it's just absolutely unreliable.
By the end of the song, you're out of tune.
By the end of the first verse,
I'd say.
But this is one of my favorite guitars ever. I spent as much time playing this unplugged, you know, just.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it's just, like an acoustic in a way.
Yeah, I love this guitar. And these guitars, like when I bought it, it was like $700 or something.
Nice.
And that was like right before people started to get really savvy with the internet. Yeah, I got it. Kind of know what they are. Now they're like $2,000 and people know what they are, but.
And still a dump truck.
Yeah.
But a beautiful one.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a great guitar. Again, like you could have bought that on Sears and Roebuck. I almost said searsandroebuck.com. But you certainly couldn't have. You could have gotten like the mail order catalog and bought it, and they'd send it to you in parts, and you would just bolt it together. So,
jeez.
This is another one that is one of those guitars that, like, when I was still working at CME, it came in, and it was like, it's obviously not right. You know, this is supposed to have like this dumb little lipstick pickup. It's black that matches the thing, and somebody had like taken that out, routed it, and put an actual gold patent number neck pickup. Like from like an early 60s ES-335 or something in there.
Wow.
And it does one trick. It just does fat, hollow body neck sound. That's it, obviously. But it plays great. It's got the right, you know, the right width of the neck. It's early 60s, so it's got the wider nut. And it sounds amazing. Feeds back a lot, but that's why we don't use a lot of gain with it, obviously. Mm. But this is one that's, again, like there's really nothing like it on the planet because Gibson really didn't make this exact guitar from the factory. Somebody did it, but the fact that they use, I mean, this pickup is probably worth as much as the guitar.
Yeah, anymore, that's all it is.
So, yeah, this is another one of my favorites. It's, again, it gets used sparingly, you know, on records for certain types of overdubs. They never use it live because, again, it's just not reliable in that way, but it sounds absolutely amazing. Oh, brass nut, too, which is not cool, but it's there, and I'm not going to fix it. Okay, so this one, this is a guitar. I love this guitar. It doesn't exist because it doesn't exist. Like, they never did this. This is not... It looks real, though. This. So we had some guy that come into Music Exchange, you know, again, like a decade ago, and this guy had two Mockingbirds that were both, like, juniors, like single-pickup Mockingbirds, but they weren't real. He had hand-built them. And again, why you would hand-build a guitar, clone of a guitar? It's not even worth that much money to begin with, right?
No.
So, like, what your end goal is, I'm not really sure. But it's not real. Somebody hand-built it and made it look like it's real.
Yeah.
It's neck through, maple, mahogany. It's awesome. This is a Bill Lawrence dual blade. It's like passive 30K output. It's ludicrous.
Yeah.
Like ludicrous how hot that pickup
that's
is.
That's a dime bag thing. Yeah.
And again, brass nut, which is, again, you can tell when the guy made it, like probably mid-late 80s. And it came into CME, and it was like we couldn't ask a ton of money for it because it's not real. But also it's so good. It's like, how do you price it? Doesn't matter. I bought it. it has a sticker, which is under the lacquer. Again, like, so that was a choice. Like, it's under the lacquer.
Yeah.
Like, he's very passionate about this weird moon thing. But just volume tone, a super, super high output bridge pickup. I use this, weirdly enough, a ton recording, just specifically doing, like, the heavy, low-end, like, down-tune riffs. Like, I usually have this strung up with, like, 12s. Really heavy strings tuned down, like, at least, like, a step or two. For doing that type of thing.
What are you normally, 10s or 11s?
11s.
Okay.
11 to, depends on if it's a down-tune guitar, like the low string or not. If it's a standard tuning, 11 to 50. If it's something where I'm gonna drop it down to like, you know, D or C, I'll do like 11 to 52 or 54. But this one has like the fattest, I think it usually has like a wound G on it, which it doesn't right now. But yeah, so this one's amazing. It's a one-trick pony, but it's the most aggressive one-trick pony. And again, it's not, they didn't actually ever make, to my knowledge, single pickup, you know, Mockingbirds like this. But again, it was some guy, like, he came in, it wasn't even like we had to like figure it out. He was like, I built this, I made this.
So yeah, he didn't try to like,
yeah, he wasn't trying to get anything over anybody. But again, like, not that it has anything to do with that. It's like, why? Like, why are we, you know, it's the one thing to like make a fake burst because a burst's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
But like to make like a handmade, the amount of time that went into like making that for a guitar that like you could have just bought like a really, 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 really good one for like $1,500 on them. But it's awesome. So I own it. I'll never get rid of it because I can't sell it for anything.
Yeah, no one's buying that.
And it also like it just does things that like no other guitar does. And yeah, it's awesome. That's the 72. Double cut's kind of lame.
Okay.
It's fine. Okay, this one actually, it's good. Good one to show just because this is my actual... You know, in the last half a decade or so, this has become kind of like my standard because it's just reliable and it does everything well and it feels good. This is a 1989 Les Paul Standard. And like, if you know Gibsons, there's like a kind of a secret sweet spot, like that 88 to 93. There's just like really like the standard USA stuff can be like awesome. Uh-huh. And this had like super high output, like those like, I remember, like those the circuit board pickups.
Okay.
Really, really high output. They sounded terrible. I ended up they sounded cool, I guess, if you're like in, you know, if you're into that, it was cool.
Yeah.
I'm not. But I put these are Lawler Low Wind Imperials. Just fabulous sounding. Like if you just need like a across the board, great sounding, like sweet humbucker that's lower output, that does everything, that's quiet, that's like well made, mm-hmm. that's wax potted so it doesn't squeal. Like I put them in here. It sounds great dirty. It sounds great clean. This is like what every time we play, I use this at most of our shows. I record with it a ton. I had it refretted at CME way back in the day too. It weighs a shitload, but that's like the era. But it's also, when I bought it, it was already, like it looks like a relic guitar. It's all real. All the wear is real. It looks like a Jimmy Page, like number one yeah. burst, but it's like actually all of it's like real. Even though I think it was poly at this point too, which is weird that it's like kind of shredded as much as it is, but really thin neck, nice jumbo frets, standard Clusens. I really didn't do anything to it other than just kind of like put better pickups in it, but this is like my standard Royale. We're going to like jam in the room, like riffy. You know, this is the one that I use because it's reliable. It sounds great. It doesn't squeal. It sounds amazing. Dirty, clean, really rich, thick, harmonic, but like not like overly high output where it gets like woofy and compressed. So mm-hmm. this is kind of my like, and when I was like a kid, like you would never be able to convince me that I'd play like a burst Les Paul. And then nowadays, this is kind of like the one that I pick up the most. So,
huh.
Yeah, it's amazing. Weighs a ton, but great guitar. Great year too. Again, like late, like pro tip, late 80s, early 90s Gibson USA. You can buy like a studio Les Paul. It'll have a real ebony board. It'll cost you $900, and they're actually awesome.
Price might be going up now.
You're probably right. Yeah.
Do you want to start going through the amps?
Yeah. So the amps. This is the Carstens amplification, the Warm Machine. Brian Carstens used to be the amp tech at Chicago Music Exchange when I was there. And the entire time that he was working there repairing other people's amps, he was working on his own designs. And this was his first design. And it's called the Warm Machine because it's basically like a JMP 50 watt, like late 70s, like 1980 maybe, like master volume 50 watt Marshall.
Okay.
But all those amps are kind of well known to be a little overly bright. And that's why his is called the Warm Machine, because it's a warmer overall, like a more sonically pleasing palette that it covers. And like the EQ works is kind of the main thing. It like actually will like cut the volume or cut the treble and add. Yeah. And so this is actually like legitimately like serial number 001. So it's like the very first one that he ever made. And I've been using this as like my kind of like basic rig platform for, you know, almost two decades.
Wow.
And then I've always used it. Me personally, it's not even about a sonic thing, because I know that like I've recorded enough big cabinets in studios that I know that a 412 and a 410, they sound amazing, but I don't, my back's not amazing. You know what I mean? So like, I don't want to use that at a rig or at a gig and like have to like carry it up and downstairs and stuff like that. So I kind of like got in the idea of the 212. And then once I got in the 212s, I realized like, I kind of like it. The 212, it's like you get the low end, but it's a little bit more compressed. And the noise, the actual noise floor and the directionality of it is a little more focused. Mm. It's not quite as spread as a 412. And so especially like when we were like, you know, in the practice space, like having the 212 on the ground, especially like it just cuts a little bit better and it has the volume that you need. And so I've been using 212s for a long time, and this was a 68, 69 blonde. It was a basement cab, a 212 for like a head that wasn't with it, but it was, I just love the look of it, the oxblood
yeah.
with the cabinet. And then I replaced the speakers years ago with creambacks actually, which sound amazing, especially for like a Marshall style. It's an EL34 amp.
It's a good pairing.
So that's been kind of my main rig for a very, very long time. And it still is my main technical rig, but like modern technology has made it so that like I'm able to kind of get there without having to like actually lug that around yeah. when I want to go places and stuff. And that's where like the other weird things that you see come from, where I switched over to, I didn't switch over fully, but like I got a quad Cortex. Mark turned me on to it, obviously. The bass player has had one and it just sounded amazing. And then when I started messing around with his unit on guitar, it kind of blew my mind what you could get out of it. And so I eventually hit them up, got one, a unit of my own. And the one problem I was having was I was playing that in front of the Warm Machine, even set clean, and then through the Fender. It was just so obviously, you never realized it because you're playing like analog, right? Yeah. It has such a color, and it's a beautiful color, but like that has all the color built into it. Mm-hmm. And so I needed something that was not colored that would reproduce my sound,
yeah,
right? And that's where like the other stuff came in. So I needed a good power amp that was clean, that would power that and give it volume. And I remember watching one of the Rig Rundowns, and I think it was the Kurt Ballou Rundown, if I remember right. Yeah. And he was using, I think it was the Digitech.
Helix.
Yeah, it was a Helix.
Yeah.
But he was using like the Quilters as like the power amps for it. And I was like, that's kind of ingenious. And they're not super expensive. They give a lot of power and they're very small, right? You can put that in your gig bag. And so I just on a whim snagged one on Reverb for a pretty good deal and plugged it in, and that sounded amazing. Like amazing. It kind of blew my mind. I was such a snob about solid state and digital for a long time. Yep. Like a lot of guys.
You can get your own way.
Exactly. And so like that, it kind of opened a whole new world to me. The fact that this thing could sound as good as it did and be what it cost and be the weight and the size that it is. And then I got enough into it where I was like, okay, I need to get a cabinet that's going to reproduce this sound without all that color of its own. And then Mark, who works with Bergantino, was like, well, they're actually working. It's a prototype, so you can't tell anybody. This is like a year and a half ago. He's like, they're going to do like a flat frequency response cabinet for specifically modeling type of things. It's like, oh, I would love to see that. And so they sent this, which is a 212 that has a tweeter built in, and absolute game changer. Like I cannot stress enough like the amount of like absolutely like uncolored crystal clean headroom and like pure just absolute like girth, power, low end volume, headroom. It's unbelievable. Like I don't know, I've never gotten it loud enough where I ever even worried about that thing. It sounds outrageous. And so I was playing through the quad Cortex, through the Quilter, through the Bergantino, and it sounded like bigger, louder, more natural than like most tube amps that I played through. And then like one day I was like, what if I just like plug my board that I normally do into the tube amp into the Quilter and the Bergantino, and with just a little bit of tweaking,
you were there.
It sounds kind of incredible too. And so now I've got this kind of like dual setup where it just depends. If I'm running like stereo stuff, I'll have them both going at the same time, like shooting like one's like wet coming out of here.
Okay.
And the dry is coming out of there. But the Bergantino cabinet, you know, paired with all this stuff, has ended up being like just like a whole sea change for the way I think about guitar tone and I think about like playing live. And like just, it's opened up a whole new world to me. Like just amps that like I've always loved the sound of that I would never own because of the size or because of the price or whatever. Now I can get 99.9% of the way there with, and the, like even the Karstens, like even though I play a lot through the Cortex, I've modeled all this stuff. I've gotten captures of like the amplifier. I've gotten the captures of my favorite drive pedals and stuff. So I can get the exact sound that I use as my baseline with the whole analog rig out of the quad Cortex now, but like with headphones on in my apartment. So it's just, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. You're living in the future and you're embracing it now.
And I was not that guy, but like, you know, I'm gonna buy Skechers and get some, you know, I'm gonna have like Velcro shoes pretty soon. Like, I don't,
yeah. Well, let's hear this rig. I know you got some pedals here we can get into. Maybe if you want to grab your 72.
So the pedal board, I've got, there's a couple pedals on here that haven't changed like ever since I got them. And like once I got them, I was like, well, that's it.
Which ones are those?
Specifically the Strymon. I have a Flint, which is Reverb and tremolo, and then I have the El Capistan, which is what I've used for delay forever. I just love the sound of tape delay, you know, the David Gilmour type of sound.
Oh, yeah.
And once I heard both of those things, you know, a decade plus ago, I was like, well, that's good. I don't have to worry about that ever again. And especially with like delay and reverb or something new comes out every month.
Oh, man.
I make a point to like not even read about it because I don't want to like,
yeah,
I don't even want to get like excited about it. I don't want to. Because it's so good, and I know it like front to back, and like, I know how it works and how it sounds. Like, it's, you know, it's what I like. And also, the Capistan having that like delay built into it, or the reverb built into it, as well as the delay. Sometimes I don't even use the Flint. But so those two have had that. They're the last things in the board, obviously.
Okay.
And they've been there forever. But I got, so the first thing on my board that's on always, forever, is the Durham Electronics, the Sex Drive.
Oh, Charlie Sexton, yeah.
Charlie Sexton drive, and I basically use it with the gain down pretty low, and I just use it almost for like the compression. It's like a, it's a preamp. It's like my, you know, like my buffer basically. Mm. I leave it on forever, and I just love the way that like here's without, and here's with. It just adds a little life and body and color and like activity to the clean sound.
Yeah.
And again, it hits everything else so much sweeter. So I just leave that out forever.
That's a good descriptive. I like that. I'm going to use that, activity. That's a good word on that.
It's yours, dude. And I have an EP booster. Like, I've had one forever. They sound good. I don't use it super often, but like when you want like, that's like my clean sound, which is like kind of a dirty clean.
Yeah.
The EP gets you like that little bit dirtier clean. And again, I just like the way it sounds. I don't use it super often, but it's just certain songs like need, I don't want to like reset the amplifier for different songs, you know, for like what my bass clean level is. So I'll set it super clean for me, and then I'll use the EP to kind of get to that slightly more dirty level that some songs require. And then this is an actual like 81 like real deal tube screamer.
Whoa.
I was gifted it by a customer, Josh Klinghoffer.
Heard of him.
From the Chili Peppers?
Yeah. Jam.
Exactly. And it's real. I mean, it's there's no way to deny it. It just sounds better and different than like normal tube screamers do. It's very mid heavy, but the best part, like the real like magic, is when you use that with like, so I use for like live especially. I fell in love with the Friedman, the BE overdrive pedal.
Yeah.
For me, like that type of overdrive, I love that amp, but I just don't want to deal with that amp.
You know? Yeah, so, I can't afford it, so that's as close as I can get to a Friedman.
I can't afford it. Also, I don't need like three channels that have like 18 dip switches. Like I can't just like get like option paralysis, and I get like anxiety, and I start to sweat, and then I stop playing guitar, and I start worrying about knobs and stuff. But I love the sound of that pedal, and so like. Sounds amazing,
yeah.
Right? Especially when you put it in front of like a good amp, it sounds great. But then like here's that. The tube screamer just like sort of tightens it up.
Gives a little glue.
Just a pinch. And especially for like lead stuff though, it's great because it doesn't really add an actual boost that you can hear, but it makes all your notes just sustained forever. Mm. And they sustain in like a very musical. Yeah. Instantaneously, it just does it.
Cause you guys go in that Mastodon Melvins territory.
Absolutely.
With the band. And so that the pedal combination.
Yeah, so when it gets heavy, it gets very heavy. But it's not like, it's, you know, there's different types of heavy. Like for us, for our band, for the sound, like the higher gain, the heavier sound is not like a super clean, like a Meshuggah type of high gain. It's more of like a little bit of like a soupier, like Melvins is a great example. Like,
yeah.
Melvins, like early Mastodon, that type of like where it's definitely like a Marshall with a boost, and you're dealing with what that entails.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not like there's no like noise gate. It's not perfectly clean. You can't just like stop. And but again, that's okay. That's what that's kind of like
what
part of the
chasing,
sound.
Yeah.
And like, again, like I like having like the ability to just kind of like let things go. And have it like do something musical, like right off the, like, again, it doesn't like squeal off into nowhere. It like gives me a note.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me a third or a fifth or an octave. It's like very useful melodically with exactly what I'm doing right off the gate. Almost like an Ebo almost, but like on command. That's why I love that Friedman, because it kind of does it right. And then having a couple boosts in front of it just for a little extra added control.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then everything else kind of like, again, other than like the reverb and delay kind of live there forever, and the boosts kind of live forever. And then for me, like the modulation stuff, it just like changes depending on the year, my mood, what we're writing. I've had like, you know, rotary type pedals, phasers, flangers. Mm. I had a Mobius for a long time, which I loved. But again, I just wanted to get away from having big digital footprint on the board and stuff. So right now I've got a Wazacraft CE2, and like every single Wazacraft pedal is like absolutely amazing. They're amazing. Like, why would you buy the vintage one? unless you're like collecting, that's one thing. But yeah. if you want the sound, like the Wazacraft nails everything. I have the VB2.
It gives you more, too.
I have the VB2, the DM2, the CE2. I think it might be it. But I have like, and it this sounds like, it sounds like you're playing through like a CE2, except without the tone suck and with like true bypass and like it's reliable and it's quiet.
Yeah.
So I love that. That's kind of like been my modulation thing lately. And then some of the newer stuff we've been jamming on, and some of it kind of comes from just like necessity almost, but like sometimes it was just me and Nate jamming. You know, there's no bass player. I had the Pog on the board just to like throw in that like sub octave. And then what ends up happening is you start like playing with that and you start writing like 311 riffs, you know, you know, because like you get like that, like
all like, mixed. Omaha styly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Freaky styly. Yeah. So you just, that's on there just almost because it's kind of a, it's more fun to jam when you got the low end, when you got the ass, when you don't have an actual bass player.
Yeah.
But it's kind of stuck because again, some of the riffs we've been writing, like it requires that octave sound riff, like that old school, like Boss OC2 or whatever. That sound is kind of like, it. You can kind of get it with a good overdrive with that pedal, and then some of the riffs require it now, so it's kind of stayed on the board. But that's really it. Like I try to keep the board like as, I used to have a really complex, and then, especially when you sing and you play, it's not fun.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like doing the tap.
You're making it harder for yourself.
I don't want to like tap dance while I'm trying to sing, while I'm trying to play, and you know, like tap, tap. It's really tough. So the less you can do, I feel like, also just like, it's just realistic, like subtraction, addition by subtraction.
Yeah.
It just sounds better, right? The less shit in the fucking signal chain, the better it sounds. So the more I would take away from it, the more I would hear like the actual guitar tone. I was like, that sounds amazing. And nobody out in the crowd cares if like, this song has the perfectly dialed in flange, but this song has a slightly different dialed in phaser. And like, no, like they can't hear it, right?
No.
It's all about like, just like how you're playing it, what it's getting across emotionally. And like most like modulation effects, they will give you that color change that you need, even if it's not the exact color change from the record or whatever. And so I've got, that's kind of like shrunk and shrunk and shrunk for me. And it's gotten to the point where it's like, I can get through most gigs, you know, ideally with just like heavy drive boost and then like the delay and then like, you know, the extra when it needs to happen. But you know, again, it keeps getting smaller. And the nice thing is though too is that like I've got like my quad cortex is set up
that
for playing
too.
Live too, and that will, that allows me for certain types of gigs to like get way more interesting and way more weird cool colors and delays and strange reverbs and things like that that I'm not going to ever, you know, build a bigger board to deal with.
Yeah. Well, Joe, love checking out your rig and talk to your brother now.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. All right, last but not least, we got Zach. Zach, how you doing?
Oh, cheers, man. I'm doing
cheers,
good.
Cheers, dude.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for inviting us into the band house.
Absolutely, dude.
Hell yeah, dude. So tell me about this SG. It's got a hole in it, my friend.
Yeah, this thing's got a hole in it for sure. It basically, so when I first got this thing, it had a pick guard still that went down and covered everything up. And I had played it like that forever. It was a standard wiring and everything. It's a 90. Yeah, it's a 90. And basically, like when I first moved to Chicago and started like playing with Royale,
yeah.
Nate and Joel gifted this to me as like a welcome, like fuck yeah, like you're here kind of a thing. And then yeah, many years later, I stuck a T-top in the bridge. This is like I believe one of the Burst Buckers.
Okay.
Or might be a custom bucket, but like if I remember right, it's that. And then yeah, I wired it so it just had a master tone, master volume. I used the holes that were there basically, and I just made it what it is.
Yeah.
So now I just like to play it like this. I think it's sick, but I think it's dope. Yeah,
yeah dude. Can we hear it? Let's hear this thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, what tunings are you guys using in?
Generally, we're doing a lot of, we're always in E-flat.
Okay.
So we're always in E-flat, so our drop D is a C-sharp, and pretty much everything is that, or we'll go down even to, I guess it would be like a B for like the songs like Robots and Guns and things like that. Mm. It all ends up being a B, because that's, yeah. F? Yeah. One of those.
Okay.
And I mean, so this is like all my guitars are strung with 11-52s because they just have to be. It's where all your half step down string tension is.
Hell yeah, dude. And so everyone keeps track. He's the youngest brother, baby brother, right?
Yes, sir.
Of Joel and and the drummer.
Yeah, Nate.
Drummer Nate. What's it like being in a band with your brothers?
It's probably a lot easier than other bands that aren't in bands with their brothers because like we inevitably talk everything out. We have to hash shit out. We've done it forever. We've been fighting each other and getting over it since we were literally like, you know, kids.
Yeah.
So there's like nothing's left on the table. You get it all out.
I wish there's a band of brothers that I wish would be like that and figure it out. But regardless, let's move on to the next guitar. I'll be your tech here.
Yeah, sounds good.
Wow. Holy shit. This is such a different departure from that one.
Oh, yeah,
like,
dude.
Just wait.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I mean, it's a Les Paul, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, that thing's, and that's a 79, so that's a, that thing is like, classically, those are just like heavy behemoths.
This thing's like a third of that.
Yeah, this is like, I don't remember exactly, but I remember when this thing came in, this is when I was working at CME, and when this thing came in, it was literally what I was doing all the specs on it. I ultimately, obviously it's mine, I found a way to take it home, but
yeah.
But I think when I weighed it, it was like 10.8, 10.9 pounds. It's heavy. It's really heavy. And this thing's super cool. Right now, I'm in the middle of doing some work to it, actually. So right now, the neck pickup's what I got in this thing.
That's it.
That's like literally, yeah, because I have, if you look at the cavity right now, it's like there's nothing connected to the bridge right now.
Okay.
So, but I mean, this thing is amazing. This is just a couple T-tops. Everything's original aside from like my buddy here in town, like painted some stuff on the back of the headstock for me because I got this thing and somebody had like used house paint to put a Confederate flag on the top of this guitar. And so it was just like, I mean, like, yeah, Zach Wild stuff, whatever. But
yeah,
I just
stripped, Pride and Glory.
I stripped all that off of it. And I just like, and like my buddy who makes like cool, weird pick guards and stuff made a pick guard for me. And I just used like, honestly, I used like a Stumac Amber just to give it a coat, give it some protection, you know, from like weather and moisture and stuff.
So but, when you actually bought it, it still had the flag on it.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like, yeah, sand it off.
Yeah. I used card scraper. I mean, it was thick, dude. I card scraper, sandpaper. It took me a minute. But I got it all off, and I was like, dude, it's like, and it's also like, you know, it's a three-piece body, which they were doing in the 70s, like, you know, when they started doing, like, multiple-piece tops and stuff in solid colorways. And I stripped it down, and I saw that it was, like, evenly spread out, the pieces and whatnot, so I was stoked.
With it being stripped all the way back down to the wood, it kind of reminds me of, like, an artisan.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
Yeah, and this thing sounds amazing. It's, like, all neck pickup right now, but actually, this thing might even be in tune right now. But
what a crazy, it's funny how you buy it because it was a deal?
Oh yeah. So basically, yeah, I mean, this was something that, what the hell's going on? This is a deal. It basically, I mean, with all the work that had to get done to this thing, I managed to get it for a steal because it was going to cost so much to have all the work done to it.
Yeah.
So I basically just I told him that I'd just pay for it, and I'd just do all the work myself for myself. There we go.
It sounds good, man.
It sounds great. This is like super, super warm. Like everything about it is just warm. Even like the bridge pickup, like when I have it actually connected, is like super bitey and super cutty. But it's a super, dude, I'm just sweating my dick off in here right now. I feel like Joel did. Oh my God. Holy shit. But yeah, I mean, so this thing is, it's super fun. And it's like, this is probably like my actual favorite guitar because I just always wanted a Les Paul custom. I mean, yeah. I think part of that, like we talked about, like I am like the youngest brother of my two brothers.
Yeah.
And Joel was always playing Les Pauls and stuff too. So that and being from Kalamazoo, I think there's just Gibson pride there too. And I just always wanted to have a custom. And when I found this one, it was like price range, needed a bunch of work, did all the work, got the stuff done to it. And it's also kind of been like, I've like sort of overhauled electronically this thing a couple different times and switched things up.
Where are we at now electronically then?
I mean, right now, I actually put everything original back into
okay,
it.
Okay, so we're
so
back.
These, so these are all 79 pots. All 79, I mean, it's the T-tops from that era and stuff, too. So that's really, like, all the electronics. Like, I played around with some different humbuckers and stuff, and ultimately, I just ended up coming back to the OGs. They just sounded so good.
Yeah.
So I left it alone.
What were you chasing?
I think I was, I wasn't chasing. I think I was experimenting. I was okay. I was trying to figure out about different kinds of pickups and different kinds of tones and things like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I was chasing, but I mean, I think I had a super distortion in here at one point. I forget, like, I think I had just like a wild, like super, like people will scoff at me for this, but like, I think I put like some rails in there at one point too. So like some fucking, I was just like, what, like what do these things do?
Yeah.
So I was just trying everything.
What was your gig at CME?
I was in a repair shop.
Okay, cool. Yep.
So I was taking care of all that stuff.
So you're hands on with, when it comes to your guitars, you're.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely like. That's why I say like people will probably scoff at me for just like some of the shit. I'm just like, I just want to fling shit at the wall. I just want to see how it goes.
Yeah, see where it sticks.
Yeah, yeah. And if it, even if it sticks, if it doesn't sound good, fuck it. I'll go right back.
But, yeah, there's a confidence probably in that you know, like if it sounds like crap, I can move on.
Yeah, I can move on. I can put it back to the way that it was. To do it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I have a workshop here and stuff that I can do my own work.
Oh, so, cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of a beauty, man, let's see this third and final one. This is so cool. I'll swap you.
Yeah, swap me out here. That thing is. Very dope.
It's got Dunaville vibes. It's got SG vibes.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty funny. So my buddy, this is a very good friend of mine that we went to the same trade school in Colorado. That's like how we met through just like, he's from Kansas City, and all of my friends at the time was for whatever reason, we're all Kansas City people. And so he moved into the same house that I did and everything.
But yeah.
This is like 12 years ago. And, He went through like the woodworking program, and he like found the guitars was just like his thing, like his bread and butter. Like the necks are all like shaved by hand with spoke shaves and hand planes and things like that. So like he's like kind of Amish about how he does a lot of this stuff. Like he's straight up like there's obvious like I mean even just down to this entire thing is it's all walnut fretboard, neck, body. The body or the neck is bound. With flame maple, and he does like the traditional like iron rod, like to steam bend all the maple and stuff too around everything. Wow. These are like just like his brainchild like works of art, and he's also a huge Star Wars nerd. So when he was building this thing, he named it the Prince of Darkness, and he was thinking about like what Darth Vader would play.
Yeah,
like if he was to make it.
There we go.
So that's like that's this thing, and this thing sounds amazing too. This is a Arcane D90. It's basically just like a super, super, super hot P90.
Okay.
Soap bar P90.
What do you think about now that you're with it is the walnut? Because it's not, think of it as a tone wood.
It's not. But honestly, so if you think about walnut, it is like grains, like structurally, like in the wood grain and just how the wood responds, it's really close to mahogany. Mahogany and walnut are both considered to be semi-ring porous. Which basically that's like where you get the like, you know, cowlings, the dog hair finishes and things like that. Semi-ring porous woods will create the space in the grain for you to put a grain filler in and then finish it, and that's how you get the pop like
okay.
that. So I mean it is very much aligned with that of Carina or mahogany. And it's not used very much, but the cool part about this stuff is a lot of this wood is, you know, like he's in Tennessee now, and he sources a lot of this walnut from Tennessee because there's so okay. much wood there.
Oh, dude, I got walnuts all over the place.
Yeah, there's so much walnut down there, and so a lot of this stuff is just straight up sourced from trees that were down there and whatnot too.
Cool. Well, let's hear this thing.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I think it's already so hot. It's wild. Basically just as my like my clean boost, and that alone with this guitar will just send it into overdrive.
just so everyone knows at home, what's the name again? Just so we can make sure to get your friends
this
to
is
love.
Leisure Guitars.
Okay, cool.
Leisure Guitar Company. Yeah, they're really, really rad. And he's going to have a whole line of stuff out coming soon too. But yeah, I mean, it's just keep a lookout for him for sure.
Yeah. What trade school were you going to, or like what like kind of focus?
I was going there for guitar building first and foremost.
Okay.
And then I found out in the process of that I didn't like building guitars. I hated it.
What did you hate about it?
I didn't like going from start to finish on them, man. I really didn't. I mean, I started out, I think the biggest thing was acoustic was the first thing I ever did. And it was just like, it was so, I mean, the guys that build acoustic guitars are, they're insane.
Yeah.
Like they're meticulous and just like how much, like there's so many things that so many parts, like so many like frequencies and like wood resonances. And then you have guys that torify tops now and all that kind of shit. So, there was just so much to it. I was like pulling my hair out. And so like, I figured out that in the instrument world, I loved like repairing, and I loved just like taking things that were just old and messed up and like making them like new again.
Okay.
That was where I found myself, like, you know, that was my pride, my joy about all that.
Okay.
Basically, yeah. I mean that, and then I got into furniture making, but furniture making's cool. I love that.
Yeah.
I didn't like building guitars. It wasn't my thing. I don't know.
Hey.
Yeah.
Now you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm blocking it, but we'll show it. What's the amp we've been hearing so far?
So this is, I'm running through a Sovtek MIG 60.
Okay.
And it's super, super fun. I mean, I could probably use getting just like a clean amp for a pedal platform. But I fell in love with this thing the first time I ever played it, because like I have it in the low gain right now, but if I threw it in the high and then turned the preamp up on this thing, like I could just roll the tone down and have a fuzz pedal going straight in. It's like a laser beam of distortion.
Really?
It's crazy. So it's like I have it dialed right now so that just basically I can get clean just with how, like my dexterity of like how I play.
Mm-hmm.
But it wants to yell at you. It's fun. It's a pissed off, angry amp.
Yeah,
all the time.
I was saying, it's the angry neighbor on the other side of the fence. Yeah,
exactly. Yep, yeah, yeah. And I have always loved Sovtek stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about it. Like, I've always liked it. I've liked the aesthetic. It's got like some high watt stuff kind of going on with the white beating, even just aesthetically. But the MIG stuff, I mean, like the MIG 6, MIG 50s, I've had the MIG 50s with and without master, without preamp, that weren't master volume.
Okay.
And those kind of just like are like powerful bassmen as well. But I don't know. I had two different MIG 50s, got rid of that. I had an AC30 for a while. And then when I found this thing, I played it. I sold my AC30 and I just bought this. I've had this ever since.
Yeah, yeah. No looking back. What about the cab?
The cab is also something that I built. I built that in a pipe organ shop in Denver. So this thing's actually put together internally. I used really, really thin leather in every glue joint. So so I made it completely, completely airtight. So
is that like, the idea behind that then?
I mean, yeah. It was, again, experimenting.
Yeah.
You know, I was just like, what's this going to do? And so I made it completely airtight in the hopes that it would just be punchy and ballsy. And I think I've pretty much achieved that. But like, yeah, when you pull the back baffle off of this thing, they get to the speakers if you have to. Like, you take the plate off. And when you take the plate off and you pull it, you can feel air sucking into it because you're pulling it out.
It's super, crowbar.
Super, yeah. It's super airtight.
What are the speakers?
The speakers in that, I believe, are two G12Ms. So the vintage, or no, not vintage 30s. They're the greenbacks.
Okay.
I did put some creambacks in there at one point. I've gone through some different things in that too. I've messed around with my stuff. Quite
yeah, bit, yeah. Sure. You're a tweaker.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Tweaker. Well, not that way. Like no, a tinkerer.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, absolutely, dude. Yeah. I mean, I throw so much stuff in there for a long time. I didn't even have like the grill cloth on there. And that actually came off of like 60s basement cab that I re-grill clothed when I was at CME.
Okay.
So the old one person didn't want, so I was like, I got to keep it, and I just cut it just so I could fit it behind the speakers that were there. But yeah, that's also just kind of a creation of mine.
Well, right on.
Yeah.
Let's get on to pedals, man. What do we got here?
So basically, my role, kind of what I like to do, especially with this band, is I end up, I'm literally dripping. What the hell? But
the lights will get you, man.
Dude, it's hot. It's no joke.
It's not fun being on this side of the camera.
a lot of this is set up for texture. Like I have, you know, I have pretty much the Archer is like, that's like, I usually, I keep that on. Generally speaking, that's always on. That's like my clean sound. It's just having my Archer just like just up a little bit. Because I like to be able to just like dig in and get a little bit of breakup. And then the screamer's there when I like when I do get heavy with Joel. But basically, the ground that I live in is like usually the vibrato, the chorus, the Strymon Capistan, and the Flint as well.
Okay.
Because basically all that is just creating texture, backing up, like filling in all the spaces that need to be there sonically.
Yeah.
Live and stuff.
Yeah. So. Kim Thayil used a description when we did a rundown with him years ago, was that he's like didn't see himself as the lead guitarist, he saw himself as the color guitarist.
Yeah, that's texture. Exactly. Yeah. 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 I'm the texture guy.
Yeah.
And I like being the texture guy a lot.
Like, what do you like about that?
Honestly, there's elements of it where personally I feel like one of my strong points is coming into someone else's idea and just thinking about what could be there.
Okay.
And or like how I can add to it and is creating sonically, especially like in a live setting, even when you're just writing before you go into recording and stuff, just filling out the space. Like sometimes like Joel will come to me sometimes with an idea and be like, hey, something's missing. I don't know what it is. Like listen to it, play with it, do your thing to it. And I like that world of living is where I think I shine the most, and it's where my brain works.
It's reflective, and it makes sense why you would like the idea of repairing and fixing, upgrading things.
For
because
sure.
It's like you find you see that thing and then you want to fix it or improve it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, talk me through the pedals. Obviously we can see them here, they're pretty standard, but like show us how you're using them and some of the core sounds you need out of them.
I mean, so the distortion stuff is obviously that is what it is. We all like, you know, I don't need to give you a bunch of tube screamer right now. My amps is gonna freak out. But the Archer, like I said, that thing kind of stays on. This is a hot pickup already. Let's see.
If you want to cruise back to the SG or the Les Paul weekend, but if you want to roll with that too, that works too.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me, man. Okay. I can play this thing right now. Also, I mean, for a lot of this stuff, like especially like close to the vest and things like that, I go to the vibrato. I go to vibrato because it's just like I said, this is all texture stuff.
Got the little mini chorus there too.
Yeah. And that stuff, like for that first record, there's a lot of, I did some keys on that, like, cause there was a Wurlitzer was buried into the mix in the recording.
Okay.
And so I used keys live for a bit. And then I just found that I'd rather just use some texture and do some light picking because it just ultimately gave me everything that we needed just with like the intro and everything. Like. Very dreamy.
So that was the cap, the chorus, and the vibrato.
Yeah.
It's interesting you're using the chorus with the vibrato because they can
similar. They kind of do the same thing. The chorus is a vibrato that you have a dry signal the whole time.
Yeah.
So it just does this kind of around it.
Yeah.
But I kind of like using a little bit of both of them just because like it's floaty. I don't know.
You're a seasick kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love being seasick. That's great.
And how are you using the Flint?
The Flint would usually be my reverb that would be on all the time. Right now, it's the only thing that my little pedal train thing is actually acting out, so I'm not powering that on right now.
Got it.
But generally speaking, that's like the reverb on that thing I like to like kind of live on. Occasionally, like when we're getting heavy into our heavy riffing sections of songs and things like that, obviously that'll go away because I don't want it to be all washed out. Mm. But for the most part, I mean, in the background of everything I'm doing, the Flint's usually living on.
Okay. And they got the L cap there.
Yeah, the cap is fun because even just like you know you can hold the bypass, it'll just do some crazy stuff too. Or am I wrong? What is it? Is it that one? Huh? I mean, just a lot of just like very dreamy stuff is going on with this for sure.
Well, hell yeah, Zach. I love the orbit that you live in with this band and like how it works with everything else that's going on. I really appreciate your time as well.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
Get out of here and we'll get you a towel.
Dude, I need it, dude. This is crazy.
You guys keep watching my rundowns.